I think that keeping an open mind towards everyone has been really important for myself, at least, because I did find cool people every single place I went in, every single mat I stepped onto. And it was kind of a shame that they all disliked each other. So, so that was kind of weaved into the early values of the Globetrotters project, is to like, just try and push that a little bit more, to don't be afraid of what's on the other side of the hill. You know? Like, I guess it's kind of like a Stone Age instinct to keep us safe. You know?
Yeah.
stay with your own 30 people. Don't go talk to the people on the other side of the hill. They'll definitely throw rocks at you and kill you. You know? So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a survival instinct, but it's also in a modern society, in a modern sport, if you want to keep an open mind to the world and the people you can run into, I think, and you need to push that instinct aside a little bit. Some cousins in Brazil once just gave themselves black belts and say, okay, these are the achievements that we now all train to get, like these little pieces of tape and colored belts. And even though it's all just an illusion that's just invented by someone, you know, it's not real outside of the jiu-jitsu community, then it does give people a true sense of accomplishment every single time. And that's not a bad thing at all. I just think it's healthy to take a few steps back sometimes and see it for what it is. I think it's definitely healthy. I mean, I think anything that puts you outside of your comfort zone is really healthy physically and mentally, because, you know, that's usually where you grow and where you fix things. And of course, like, fighting sports is a very easy way to put yourself out of your comfort zone.
Today's guest is Christian Graugart, who is the founder of BJJ Globetrotters, a community of people who travel and do jiu-jitsu. And through things that I do, of course, I found that interesting. But what I found even more interesting were his life philosophies. I think one of his goals, I don't think he would put it this way, but one of the results of his movement or his philosophies were going against the politics in jiu-jitsu, and which I think, you know, a lot of what he says is kind of a metaphor or analogous rather to politics in life, the us versus them paradigm we spoke about a lot, the way that people dehumanize each other or social stratifications. All of these things can be seen in a very highlighted way in the jiu-jitsu community. But, you know, even if you don't do jiu-jitsu, I think you can see and gain value from his perspectives on how this applies in life. I mean, the jiu-jitsu community with its belts and its rankings and its schools and its lineages are almost like a hyperbolized version of a lot of what we experience in life or see in human conflict day to day. So even though most of you guys listening to the podcast probably don't do jiu-jitsu, even though I think you should, I think you'll enjoy this episode in terms of Christian's philosophy. We speak about human nature, we speak about society, travel, and of course, we also speak about physical movement. Right now you're listening to episode 097, Christian Graugart, BJJ Globetrotter. The Rwando Podcast is an exploration of the unconscious and the game of life. Be sure to visit rwando.com to get a preview chapter of my upcoming book, Infinite Play, and free access to my content library. Enjoy the show. All right. Hey, Christian. Glad we could make the time. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no worries, man.
Yeah, for sure. So I found out about you from a friend, Ivan, who owns a gym in Thailand. He told me about you because I've been traveling around doing jiu-jitsu as well. And one of the things that caught my eye, other than just the fact that you're traveling and doing jiu-jitsu, this part of what you're doing, was you mentioned something on your website about the us versus them paradigm, which I found really interesting outside of jiu-jitsu, but also in jiu-jitsu in particular. So I want to ask you about that. But before we jump into that, could you share a little bit about your story and how you started BJJ Globetrotters?
Yeah, I'm originally from Copenhagen, Denmark, and so I'm just trying to make sure that my phone is not falling down. I might just hold it. I am from Copenhagen, Denmark, and I've been doing training jiu-jitsu for like 20 years or so at this point. And 10 years ago, I did like this around the world trip to train jiu-jitsu everywhere, and as I returned home, I kind of wanted to try and keep that feeling going for myself and also see if I could kind of share that with others. And that turned into this strange thing, BJJ Globetrotters, which is, I'm not even sure exactly what it is, but it's kind of a community job, and it's a lot of things, you know, but it's just a lot of people involved in, I guess, like sharing common values or, you know, yeah. So it just kind of happened as kind of a result of me traveling a lot and just wanting to do that more and make that easier for myself and also try to make it easier for others to travel with jiu-jitsu, and because I got so much out of that myself. So, Club Trotters has been running for like 8 years now or something, and it's grown to, it's quite big. Of course, pandemic year is not the best time to, traveling and jiu-jitsu is not like the absolute hardest thing to do right now, but yeah
actually my friend Yvonne told me about you, because when I met him in March, I had plans on going to all these different European countries, and I was just picking places with gyms specifically, and I was connecting with people, and then yeah, pretty much all of my plans got canceled this year.
Yeah. Oh, you're not the only one.
yeah So one thing that's interesting is that, I mean, 10 years isn't that long ago, but both jiu-jitsu and being a nomad weren't super popular back then, but now they're kind of like, they're very ubiquitous. Did you expect anything like in both of those worlds to grow in the way they have? I mean, almost everyone is aware of jiu-jitsu and nomading nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think I did anything unique in that sense. I mean, even when I was traveling, there was a ton of backpackers, you know, just living out of a small backpack. I think that's been, I'm not sure, obviously I based this on absolutely nothing, but I'm not sure that it was less popular back then to just kind of backpack around the world and do nothing, or I don't know. But yeah, I don't think I did anything special in that sense. I think I might have just been one of the first people who did it and also was very good at marketing it, in a sense, like writing a good blog and taking good pictures about it and kind of put it out there. But I mean, didn't everyone go to China to do Kung Fu in a temple back in the 80s or something? I don't know.
Right.
That's
right.
How I imagine it anyway. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's anything new or special in that sense, but I might just have been one of the first ones to combine that with some other skills like internet exposure and stuff. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess just now, I mean, I guess in the communities I hang out in, like ever since the 4-hour work week, there's been such a huge boom in this where it's like almost like a normal lifestyle. Whereas I think, I mean, I might have just been unaware. It seemed way more rare. Maybe it's just because I'm American, but
I don't know. But I mean, when I was traveling a lot in Asia, like back, I started doing that in like 2006 or 2007. And I was like, just surprised. I was like, oh my, there's a lot of people just traveling for years. You know? They were just everywhere in Thailand and everywhere I went. And I was really surprised back then that was completely normal. But then again, I based that on absolutely nothing. Just that it was new for me back then. So, but I think like backpacking and just like living on the road has been, I don't think there's anything new or unique in that sense.
Yeah, fair enough. So yeah.
Next year, so.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about these like values of your community. And I guess they were starting with you because the us versus them stood out to me on your website. Cause I've only been training a little bit. I mean, only a couple of years and I haven't really noticed it, but there's obviously like I've maybe trained at maybe 20 different schools and you definitely notice a different culture. No one's not friendly, but there's definitely a them and us feeling sometimes. Could you share a little bit about like what made this like such an important idea to you? And specifically with jiu-jitsu, I guess.
I think, first of all, I don't think it's, well, I think it's a natural human thing. Obviously, like tribalism, where you see that in everywhere in like corporate world or sports or anything, you know, even in countries or races or cities or, you know, everybody's competing. It's completely natural, natural human instinct. In jiu-jitsu, it's been more or less intense, I would say, but probably less now as I think also jiu-jitsu is kind of moving away from the Brazilian culture a little bit more and becoming more international, but we don't have that much of like tribal warfare in Rio de Janeiro like in our schools anymore. My professor once got slapped on the beach by some other professor. So that's why we hate the school since the 80s or something, you know. It's kind of, that's kind of a weird thing. But I think it's way more mellow now as jiu-jitsu is becoming more like widespread and more cultures in, kind of affect the culture of the sport. But obviously, having traveled a lot, and you know, every city I went to, I just went into every single gym I could find, and there was always this, not always, but often there's this sense that if you went to one gym and you said you had been somewhere else, they're always like, oh yeah, oh these guys over there, you know, like, and I don't think it's necessarily that because these people are not good humans or good people. It's just, I think it's a very natural thing. It's no different than, I don't know, if you're part of a fan group of one football team, then it's very instinctual for you to maybe not dislike, but to kind of stick with your own compared to you know, the fans of the other football teams. And that's a very human instinct, I think. In jiu-jitsu, I found this a little bit sad because I just went to all the gyms and everyone was super cool in every single gym. It's not like one gym had all the nice people and the other gym had all the idiots, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that. But that's often how you could kind of, I think, easily, you know, fall for that trap that all your possible friends are in this place that you randomly signed up with. And and in the other gyms, they're all idiots because you heard some bad stories or something, you know, or they don't have morals or whatever. But I think that's a trap because I went to all the gyms and then they were all super nice. So everybody was super cool. And I just found that to be kind of a shame because I went so many random places and every single place I found people who like became my friends and they were really nice. And I say, why should I, if I followed the advice of everywhere I went, like people everywhere I went, then I would probably have skipped a lot of academies because they had told bad stories or something about the people there or the instructors there. And if I skipped those places, I wouldn't have met those people and become friends with them. And they were not bad guys at all. So I need to push this more for myself and for others that, I mean, you never know where your next best friend is going to hang out. You know, it's pretty random what academy you sign up at first, you know, like that has really, I mean, you might switch or find a place that works out better for you. But most people, they just sign up in a random place and, oh, now this is my tribe, you know, or my family. And I'm going to stick with these and fight for these people and not be friends with anyone who's randomly signed up in another academy down the street. And I think that's a strange trap to fall into because you never know. I mean, you never know where you'll find your next best friend. So I think that keeping an open mind towards everyone has been really important for myself at least, because I did find cool people every single place I went in, every single mat I stepped onto. And it was kind of a shame that they all disliked each other. So that was kind of weaved into the early values of the Globetrotters project, is to like just try and push that a little bit more to don't be afraid of what's on the other side of the hill. You know, like, I guess it's kind of like a Stone Age instinct to keep us safe, you know.
Yeah.
stay with your own 30 people. Don't go talk to the people on the other side of the hill. They'll definitely throw rocks at you and kill you, you know? So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a survival instinct, but it's also in a modern society, in a modern sport, it's really, I mean, if you want to keep an open mind to the world and the people you can run into, I think, and you need to push that instinct aside a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people can actually do this on a global scale? Not to jump, I mean, in politics, we see this, and it almost seems impossible when you look at the masses and their ability to do this. Like, I'm sure like you didn't have this mission with BJJ Globetrotters, but do you think people can actually shift this way, or is it just, this is part of our wiring and it's how we are?
You know, it's like when you start jiu-jitsu, everybody headlocks each other. And it's a fucking bad idea. You know, it's just bad wrestling. But you can unlearn it. But that's just another instinct, you know, another survival instinct, grab the hard drive and squeeze, which is not very proficient usually if you want to learn how to grapple. But you can definitely unlearn these things and for sure the same thing, but it takes an effort, you know. I mean, even still for me, I've been practicing for for many years to keep an open mind towards everyone, but it's still kind of, it still takes a little bit of effort to kind of enter another tribe, so to say, you know? And once you've done it, you're like, oh, this is actually not dangerous at all, but there's something inside of you that's trying to keep you from it. But yeah, that polarization is dangerous. I mean, you see that in countries with only two political parties, you know, you see that in that happens quite a lot, and it definitely gets the worst out in people. So I probably have a bit more of a hippie approach to that. Like, let's all be friends.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of energy mentally to go against those instincts, I guess, especially when you're afraid, you know, these always happen when there's like scarcity in resources or something. You have to kind of have a surplus of time and energy to get past this, I guess.
I mean, even just showing up for an open mat in a different school, that's kind of scary in a sense. One thing for yourself, but also, oh my God, what are my teammates going to think about this? What is my instructor going to say? You know, there's a lot of things, and this is all just primal stuff. You know, what's my group of monkeys going to say to this? How are they going to react that I go and share some food with another group of monkeys? You know? So, yeah. But at the end of the day, we're just grown-ups who likes to grapple. There's really nothing more to it. It's like, you could replace grappling with like kicking a ball around, and then it would be, it's the exact same thing. You know?
Right.
Why do you go and kick a ball with those guys? You're friends with us, you know? Like, so.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that made me laugh in your book, it was, because I mean, I'm pretty new to jiu-jitsu, but I've traveled around and I've been like, man, everywhere other than my home gym spar so hard. I can't believe that every other school except where I train is hard. And then I read it in your book. It's like, oh, I mean, I guess I'm the new guy or I'm the traveler. People are, and no one's rude to me, but everyone's maybe trying to prove something that their white belts are better. I don't know. But
And that's completely normal, you know. And as soon as you start to build a trust with strangers, then you will get different training, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's very normal, especially in a sport where we have visual indicators for exactly how good we're going to be, and it's divided into 17 different levels of visual indicators. Mm-hmm. So when you walk onto the mats, you can see exactly who you're supposed to beat and who you're not supposed to beat. And and this is, in a sense, very comforting for a group of monkeys, because you know exactly where you are in the hierarchy. But if another monkey comes in from another and from the other side of the hill, you know, it's like, oh, is that, then you have to test the validity of your hierarchy at home. And for sure, if you're a 3-stripe white belt and there's a 2-stripe white belt coming in, it's very instinctual to see, I am supposed to beat this guy. He's not supposed to be better than me, even though it's absolutely ridiculous that you could put a visual indicator on someone to indicate exactly how good they are in the sport, you know, divided by 17 different grades, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I noticed that when before I had any stripes, there's no pressure. So it was great, right? Like if I took down a blue belt, it was like amazing, but if someone submitted me, who cares? But now, you know, it's going against that instinct.
But that's never ending. That is never ending. Right. But it takes a lot of effort to kind of get rid of that, you know? And of course it's bullshit. You try to put that in any other sport and people just laugh at it, you know? Mm-hmm. Imagine like, let's say football or tennis or something, or golf. If you had if you count in black belt degrees, then you have 27 different levels. And this is supposed to kind of transcribe into actual real world skills, not even counting that you get older or injured or something, you know, I have a bad day. You're supposed to perform to that level that's indicated around your waist. And that's really strange, you know, that makes people do weird, weird things, you know, like they would, as you say, you know, it messes even with, it, even as a beginner, it messes with your head when you get a stripe or another color, because suddenly you have to prove your place in the hierarchy in that monkey group, you know, that is real. Because what if you're a purple belt and a blue belt beats you, then something is not right, you know, this is a weird, weird thing. Your brain starts running, or even if you have like 3 stripes, but someone just started and they beat you, and it's kind of like your brain can't stop thinking about it. And that's strange, huh?
Yeah, it is. But also, I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, I got into jiu-jitsu as a 30-year-old, so I'm glad that there's a white belt category, you know, so that, you know, I can at least compete with people in my, you know, range. But yeah, I mean
don't
it
get
is
me wrong.
Strange.
It's not a bad thing. Like, I think there's a lot of value in having this belt system because, one, it's a huge, huge motivation for people that we cannot take away from them. And I mean, it's a true, real feeling of accomplishment, even though it's just an illusion, something we just made up. You know, some cousins in Brazil once just gave themselves black belts and say, okay, these are the achievements that we now all train to get, like these little pieces of tape and colored belts, and even though it's all just an illusion that's just invented by someone. You know, it's not real outside of the jiu-jitsu community, then it does give people a true sense of accomplishment every single time. And that's not a bad thing at all. I just think it's healthy to take a few steps back sometimes and see it for what it is, because it could also be used for bad things.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned Brazilian culture, which is one thing. I mean, Brazilian jiu-jitsu in itself is so fascinating because of its cross-cultural existence. Like, it only existed because these two cultures got meshed in martial arts. But also, you've seen Brazilian jiu-jitsu players in many different countries. I was wondering, and this might be a weird question, but have you noticed people move differently by culture? Like, physically? No?
No. Okay. Two arms, two legs, man. It's the same.
Okay. I just had the theory that, like, a lot of the movements in Brazilian jiu-jitsu could have only been created in Brazil, where, like, their dancing is a certain way, and, like, you know, like jiu-jitsu existed for a long time in Japan, but no one came up with extensive use of the guard, or like the omoplata never was created. Like, it's almost like it had to be in Brazilian culture to have been formed. I mean, it's just a random thought. Maybe I'm off.
I don't think so, man. Just look at old, like, wrestling and grappling happens everywhere in the world. Like, see the folk wrestling and all this stuff is like, it's nothing unique to any one culture. It's human nature. It's different. It's no different than animals when they're, you know, animal babies. They all start wrestling. You know, they also play wrestling as part of growing up, and it's just a natural thing, and it evolves everywhere. I don't think culture has anything to do with it. If one thing Brazilian culture has brought to it is more like it's definitely like, from my theory, again, based on absolutely nothing, but kind of more like a macho culture, like a one-on-one, like let's fight it out on the beach, you know, everybody stay back and it's one-on-one kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that has, I mean, if you just look at the old Gracie in action videos, you know, that's kind of weird. I don't think it had any influence on the style, but it had a lot of influence on like reality checked, like martial arts, you know?
Okay.
Because it's more like a hardcore fight culture, but
don't you even think with the one-on-one thing, like pulling guard wasn't really a thing, as far as I know. Like, wasn't really a thing. It's not really a thing in judo. It wasn't really a thing in pre-Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But like, it only really works in a one-on-one fight. Like, you're not going to do that on a battlefield or in like a 10-on-10 fight. Like, don't you think maybe something about Brazilian culture affected the movements as well?
Well, ground fighting in general is a bad idea against more than one opponent anyway, so I'm not sure. It's a really, really bad idea. So maybe when it's a one-on-one and there's a sports aspect, then it makes more sense, you know. But in reality, jiu-jitsu is pretty bad for self-defense, I would say. That would like pretty bad choice if all you do is start on your knees and roll around on the floor. I mean, it's not going to defend strikes. And I sports jiu-jitsu is pretty, I mean, they sold it well, but to be honest, I mean, nobody believes that's the best for self-defense anymore.
Did you by any chance see this thing? I think it was like on 10 years ago, called Team Fighting League. It was like 5-on-5 MMA. It wasn't very popular.
was it like in Poland or something?
Something like that. But there's one episode where they had five Brazilian black belts against five boxers, and you know the boxers won because they could just run around punching. Like, some of the guys were pulling guard and getting stomped on, and it didn't work. Yeah,
I mean, we maybe in the 90s, you know, but the MMA has evolved quite a lot, you know, and I see the the wrestlers are dominating everything, you know, like those who control the distance and also no striking. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm never going to fight anyone on the street anyway. That would be pretty stupid. So I'm definitely not like an expert on any of that stuff, but yeah.
I did see on your YouTube like a remix with Boss Rutten's like street fighting videos.
Ah, that's the best. That's the best. If you want real street fighting techniques, you talk to Boss Rutten.
Yeah.
My God, those are the best.
Yeah, I've never been in a street fight, but any time I've been in a close something like a hostile confrontation, I've always ended up in his posture, like head down, like in case someone headbutts me. That's never happened, thankfully. But
yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. You know, I get it, you know, I mean, people want to defend themselves, but honestly, if your goal is survival, then learning how to fight is pretty far down the list, you know, like, they will also stuff their face with processed food and, you know, drunk driving and all these things, you know, so anyway, that world.
Where did your hippie attitude come from? I know it's a weird question, but you know, I mean, I think most people probably wouldn't associate that with a martial art. Did it come from anything in particular?
No, I don't know, to be honest. I think in general, like Scandinavians are pretty laid back about everything. You know, it's kind of a safe and easy life there. You know, you don't really have to worry about anything. I mean, I have friends in a certain part of the world who never leaves their house without a gun, you know, and that's just in case they have to kill someone that day. And it's that's really far from my reality. I respect that this is the reality for many people, but I don't know. You know, I think also just like doing that round the world trip and just like meeting so many people, and I think that definitely like supercharged that kind of attitude for me. It's hard to say. I don't have like hippie parents or anything.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, your book, the gist that I got from your book was like just the idea of not dehumanizing people, of rehumanizing and recognizing that everyone's a person. It actually reminded me of, I used to drive a taxi in New York for a while, which everyone thinks is the most stressful thing. You get angry at each other. There's lots of yelling. But being a cab driver with other cab drivers, I realized that we're all in it together, and it kind of it really zenned me out, like more than any other job I've had. So yeah. But one thing you did mention in your book is that I think before you got into jiu-jitsu, martial arts was like an outlet for anger. And I think a lot of people get into martial arts because they want to fight. I was curious if you had any thoughts on that, especially given your current zen-like attitude.
My current zen like attitude. I like that. I mean, maybe sitting on the beach here, so it's very zen like. But it's really fucking warm. So I'm actually sitting on the beach right now, and it does look quite zen, but I'm also like a dog in a car just burning here at noon. So I think it's definitely healthy. I mean, I think anything that puts you outside of your comfort zone is really healthy physically and mentally, because, you know, that's usually where you grow and where you fix things. And of course, like fighting sports is a very easy way to put yourself out of your comfort zone, because instinctually, especially as a man, I think that you have this fantasy that you can always like, you can, at least you can, you think you can fight, you know, because it's just a natural instinct to be, that as a man, you must be able to fight, to defend yourself. But even the first day you step on the mat, you realize that you can do nothing. So very quickly, you're out of your comfort zone, and as you progress training, then competition is definitely the best way to kind of sharpen your mind and your body. I have no doubt about that. So yeah, for sure. I think it's, for myself, it's done a lot just training, but also even more competing. That has helped me tremendously. Not that I had any problems or anything, you know, but yeah, just putting myself out of that comfort zone has been really valuable in so many ways. So I definitely recommend that to anyone, even not necessarily to fix any problems, but just generally, you know, to build a strong mind and body. I think competition is crucial. It doesn't have to be martial arts, but if you get locked in a cage with someone, then you will learn to survive. So even just jiu-jitsu competition is extremely valuable. You know, that's low risk. No one is going to try to punch you in the face. So,
yeah. Yeah, and one of the things I found most valuable about, because I've done other combat sports before, I used to box growing up, but you don't spar every time you box, right? I mean, well, one thing that's cool about jiu-jitsu is that you get to simulate combat every practice, every class, and it really, you know, it gives you an opportunity to drop your ego, because even if you did have this like idea, oh, I need to you know, be a killer because I'm a man. Well, you have enough sparring in a given week that it doesn't matter, because you win and lose both, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like jiu-jitsu is a fix-all for egos, because there are some idiots in jiu-jitsu as well, and there's plenty of them. I think it's definitely a healthy outlet for people training, and even more competition. And we all know as soon when you start training, you start taking better care of your body. You know, you become more healthy, you eat healthier and everything. And even better if you sign up for a competition, the moment you sign up, you will start to sleep more, you will start to drink less, you will start to eat healthier, you will start to train more. It's just like a natural instinct, because you set yourself up for a situation where you have to survive, so to say. And obviously no one is going to die in jiu-jitsu competition, but it's scary, because other monkeys are watching, you know, that you might lose and you might not live up to your what you perceive to be your potential and your level. So in that sense, competition is putting yourself out in deep waters, like literally just like jump in the ocean and you better figure out how to swim to shore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I have my first competition next month. It's been great. Taking training so much more seriously, and
literally competition is the best way for me to eat healthy. It's just, if I want to eat healthy, I just sign up for a competition. I don't even think about how I'm going to do in the competition, but I just know from the moment I decide to go until the competition, I'm going to be so much healthier as a human being. So it's just a great little motivator for that.
Yeah. How often do you compete these days?
Not.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm like a hobbyist dad, and I live on a tiny island. There's no competitions around, and I travel a lot for the jiu-jitsu camp, so I don't really travel for, you know, and then there's family holidays and stuff, so I don't really take like weekends out to fly to the US for a competition or something. That would be bad.
Right.
It's kind of been there, done that, you know. I mean, I did 10 years where I did compete quite a lot and just trained and did nothing else. If I have the opportunity, I always jump to it. I always take it. You know, anytime I have the opportunity to compete in anything, I will do it. Even just for the fun of it. Like we had a camp in Poland last month, and we had like a backhold wrestling competition, which is like a traditional Celtic wrestling style. And I just have to sign up there. I can't not compete. Just even if I have no chance of winning, I don't even know the rules or anything. I think just for myself, my own rule is if there's a competition, I will sign up, because I know it will, you know, it's always a good experience afterwards. And being scared and nervous and
nice
and all that, and think you're going to lose, and you probably will, and, you know, think you're not going to perform or you're going to suck, that's part of the process, you know? That's completely normal.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of pressure. Like on the podcast, don't speak about jiu-jitsu much, but like, especially for modern people, I think men especially, there's not a lot of necessary challenges where you need to have that pressure. Like, you kind of have to look for it for your own mental health, if anything. So yeah, it's great to have this kind of thing, simulated combat or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, what else do you do for that? You know, like maybe bungee jumping or something, do something like paintballs now and then, you know, some corporate trip once a year or something, you know, where you push yourself. But I think finding that finding something that makes you nervous and afraid is very healthy for you. Just keep doing it until you're not afraid of it anymore. I think you should always seek that out. And jiu-jitsu competition is such an easy way to do that. You know, it's like, it's low risk, it's high intensity. It'll make you take good care of your body, and you will become stronger, because you're going to have to deal with fear and anxiety and adrenaline and stuff. And those are very valuable things to kind of skills to build, I think, at least for me, it's been so. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious about your like the business model, because it seems like BJJ Globetrotters kind of just became, you were already doing these things and you kind of just made a lifestyle around it, or a business around it. Was it up in the plans, or did you just figure like, oh, I might as well create a camp and bring people here?
No, I never had any plans, and I don't have any plans with the business. I don't have a business model, and I don't have a business plan. I have no goals. I just do whatever I think, whatever I want, and then hopefully someone else wants to join me if it's fun enough, if I do a good enough job of making it interesting. So that's the business model.
Cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
is
pretty
that
much
your
it.
basic approach to life in general?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't like to have any plans. I mean, if you have to have plans, you have to have plans. But if you don't have to have any plans, then I don't think you should. I mean, at least for me, I have no idea what Globetrotters is going to look like in 6 months. There could be another pandemic. Who knows? Another someone else makes another bad soup that's so bad it breaks the world economy. You don't know. So I could have had all sorts of business plans for this year, but I mean, you have no idea. So I just take it like I just take it a little at a time always, and the same, the camp just kind of happened. It's, if I find something fun that I want to do, then I try to do it as much as possible, and then maybe, I mean, it's just a matter of the camps is just something that randomly also provides me some income. It's just one of hundreds and hundreds of projects and stuff that I do that. And then just it's just one of them that randomly also became kind of a job. So yeah, so I just try to do as much as I can, and then just see what happens. And if it's fun, usually other people want to join in.
Cool. I mean, looking at your stuff online, it's like, I mean, it was every time I would look at something of yours, I was like, man, it looks like he's having so much fun. Like going to the
Yeah,
castles
well,
or whatever.
I mean, nothing else really makes sense, right? If you especially as what I usually say is like, if I need to remind myself about how I want to do these things, I just watch like documentaries on space and time. And even there's like there's a very popular YouTube video at the moment. I think it's like time lapse of the universe or something. Every time I watch stuff like that, then you just realize how infinitely small we are as individuals and how infinitely unimportant we are in the scope of everything. And I think every time I realize that, then there's nothing makes sense other than just do whatever I want. So that's what I
Cool.
try to do.
Sounds very Taoist.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I have no time to waste, at least. So that's what I feel like, could die from some strange virus next year.
Yeah, for sure. So you live in the Caribbean most of the year, or all year when you're not doing your retreats?
Yeah, I live here all year round. I've been here for 4 years.
How'd you end up picking there of all your locations?
I didn't pick it. It was kind of random. It was I just I wrote that book about this round the world trip, and someone here read it, and they said they don't have an instructor, so I was invited over to teach for a few weeks, and then I just kept coming back, and eventually I was like, yeah, maybe there's an opportunity to try something new, because I had kind of cut down everything in my life and had like tried to own as little as possible, which included selling my academy in Copenhagen. And then the opportunity was kind of there, and I just thought, oh, I can't not try it. So we've been here for 4 years now, and really like it. It's very, very small. It's a 9,000 people island.
Oh, wow.
Small like a rock
Huh.
than
Yeah, that's
anything.
yeah. My high school was half that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's an interesting, just an interesting contrast. I like contrast. I
So are
guess
you
the,
still living kind of minimalist?
yeah, I try. It's a bit more complicated with kids because you need a lot of stuff. When I didn't have kids, then it was you. I just had a bit of clothes and a laptop. I think that was pretty much what I owned at some point. With kids, it's a little bit more complicated. You need more things to make things work. But like from a personal point of view, I don't really have anything. Just a computer, camera, That's like it. I don't like to buy things. It's also nice to live here because it's really difficult to buy anything. You can't just it's not like you order anything online and it's there the next day. It doesn't work like that. You know? So it's really difficult to get in. But yeah, I try in general to own as few things as possible. I think that's cool. That's good because, you know, it's a cliche, but anything you own will end up owning you, and then
right, Fight Club.
can't even leave your things, you know. That's kind of weird if just like dead things are holding you back. So yeah, I really like that. There's a good, really good book on this that I like was Early Retirement Extreme. Did you read that ever?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of a classic. I recommend it. It's really interesting. But that's cool. An extreme version of simple living, early retirement. But I think that was really interesting. It's a little bit dry. It's written more like a university report than anything, but it's pretty cool. Huh. It's pretty interesting.
Is that kind of like the, I'm familiar with Mr. Money Mustache and like the FIRE community?
I did not read that. I just heard about the name, but no, I haven't read that.
Okay. I think it's a similar idea of like stripping down to essentials so you don't really have expenses. And I mean, the guy retired when he was 30 or something on a regular income.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. You know, you don't actually need that many things. But then again, humans need things. You know? So
right.
It's part of social recognition.
Yeah. So you mentioned in the beginning, like the Globetrotters community is like, I think you mentioned share similar values. I mean, we spoke about some of them. Was there anything else that you found that like kind of brings your community together in terms of values?
I'm not sure. I just think I just saw a few things that I didn't like in how like jiu-jitsu groups organized, like usually the business of affiliation, you know, is very much based on it's very much based on someone just selling recognition, you know, in terms of belt promotions or affiliations or logos or something. And I think it's what I experienced a lot from traveling is that I mean, you never know who's going to be, who could potentially be your next best friend. You know, that's definitely what I've experienced. And very often what I see in jiu-jitsu is that people could build relationships based on one part of the relationship wanting something from the other part. Like that's very common in jiu-jitsu because it's usually one person up in the hierarchy who is in a position to give something to the other person who is lower in the hierarchy. And that goes on usually until black belt or until black belt second degree, because at second degree you can promote black belts yourself and then you really don't need your instructor anymore for any other than like putting a stripe on your belt every 3 years. And I've seen a lot of people in like sad situations in jiu-jitsu where they're kind of they're kind of staying in bad relationships, even sometimes like abusive relationships with like, you know, psychopath or something. And they stay there because they really still want something from that person. And it's just an imaginary belt promotion. And I think that's been really sad to see, that people are literally miserable and they still go train somewhere because they feel like they have to, so that they one day can get this belt and then they can escape this horrible relationship they're in, you know? And sometimes it's even, you know, as horrible as it is, it's like physical abuse or even sexual abuse, and people still stay there because of this power dynamics between people. And I think that's important to speak up against, at least for me. and I think a key ingredient here is to build relationships that's not based off of one person wanting something from the other person. And that's what I try to do as much as possible for myself. And I think also try to kind of weave that into the culture of Globetrotters, since we don't really get involved in belt promotions. You know, it's not like you go to the camps and then everybody gets it promoted, or people sign up for the camp hoping that they will also get their belt that day. I mean, I don't put myself on a pedestal as an instructor. I try to invite as many instructors as possible at the camps, because if there's only like two or three, then they will turn into some kind of weird gods at the camp and everybody's like wants to suck up to them. But if there's 30 instructors, then it's all just a bunch of friends who are on a holiday together. You know? at least pulling a little bit more in that direction. And I don't like the hero worship that happens in jiu-jitsu a lot. And it will also be weird for me, you know, like if I as I used to say, my worst nightmare is if I show up to the camp and just constantly like 25 guys trying to buy me lunch and hoping for the next piece of tape on the belt. That would be absolutely nightmare.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing you speak about it in the jiu-jitsu context, because everything you're saying kind of applies to most of society, like people
in transactional relationships. Yeah. I mean, I've not really been involved in corporate world, only for a few years when I was really young, but I can imagine it's very much the same mechanics going on.
Yeah, and so and with that, this might be my last question as well. So, like, I know you've had Globetrotters is not accepted in IBJJF anymore.
Right.
That's still the case, right? Like, there's whatever that conflict
is. Yeah, I don't think that's moving anywhere. So.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, it's almost like a microcosm for like this ideology of not transactional relationships or not having these us versus them or this tribalism. Against like the olds or like the bodies that can kind of control the world. Like in jiu-jitsu is IBJJF, but like in the world, like most of the world runs on, you know, we call it corporate paradigm or whatever it is. I kind of asked this earlier, but do you think this could possibly shift on a critical mass level, or this is just how the world is and those of us who want to go against it can live our own lives?
That's a great question. I have no idea. And also, if I I don't think I have any authority to know anything about that. I would hope so, you know. And I think I always find it interesting for myself to try and go a little bit against the common perception of things. You know, I think you described it very well, that it's pretty much a micro battle of ideologies. And yeah, I mean, I would hope that things would change and people would just like loosen up more. But I also understand and respect that I'm coming from a different background and I'm not trying to change the world or anything. But if some people want to think that we can also do things in a different way, then I will be happy, because then I can make a few friends, you know. I can also be friends with people who believe different, but you know what I mean. I mean, it is what it is. It's the same as with the camps. You know, I will go, and if someone else will join me, then we have a camp. If nobody else wants to join me, then I'll go alone, because I still want to go. It's kind of the same thing. You know, it's like, do you want to follow the old school IBJJF way of doing things, of signing for paper forms and like calling each other professors and like having a hierarchy of who can approve. And it's pretty much like a pyramid kind of multi-level marketing thing, or should we try and see if things can work a little bit different? And you know, we can try, and then if it works, then it works. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. And we built something called beltchecker.com, which is kind of a community of jiu-jitsu practitioners, which is also like a democratic kind of community-based alternative to IBJJF, where its belt verification is based on trusted votes from the community more than IBJJF saying we are the federation and you must have signatures on our piece of paper and pay us money. And that's just, I think it's just interesting to try these things, because you can go for decades and just kind of accept status quo. But if you don't try to see if you can do things a little bit differently, then you'll never find out. And I guess it's the same with Globetrotters. It's just I didn't really like the way that affiliations were run. I think it could be done a little bit different. And you know, maybe nobody would have agreed and it would never have existed. But we're also now the biggest affiliation in the world, counting on how many academies are involved. So in that sense, yeah, you never know. But it's interesting, you know, try to go in a different direction and see if something can kind of be invented out of nothing.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that about your movement, because it's always harder to be the more laid back person, because like the more uptight person can always shut down the play of the laid back person, but the laid back person is always going to accept the other thing. So it's kind of a one way where it would like the no goes one way, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, it is what it is, and not everyone will fit into the way I think that I would like things to be. Some people enjoy like hardcore hierarchy and tribal warfare. You know, it's human nature after all. You know, there's a reason why sports clubs have huge fan bases that are fighting for their football team like it's fucking life and death, you know. It's completely normal, and some people thrive in military environment, you know, and I would just not do that at all. But then, you know, we're all different. So as long as there's room for everyone to create these different environments and then see if, as long as there's a freedom and the room for that, then, you know, people will have the opportunities to kind of fit in where they see they fit in. So I think that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I definitely appreciate your philosophy on these things. I was going to ask you your plans for BJJ Globetrotters, but I guess you probably don't, especially given the year, right?
Yeah, even without a pandemic, I have no plans, so I'll just...
But are the camps going on this year? I thought I saw some are still going.
Yeah, I mean, we've been kind of going with the flow this year, you know, and some of them worked out, a lot of them did not, but it is what it is. We just do what we can, so we managed to do like since March we managed to do 4 camps.
Oh, cool.
Which has been extraordinarily fun, especially since this year has been extraordinarily boring. So and then we had to postpone quite a lot. We have a camp coming up next month in Arizona, but who knows how the world is going to look next month, you know. So
yeah, in America
we'll go with the flow, and we just kind of if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and then we have dates ready to postpone it for another 6 months or so, and then we try again, and you know, we just keep trying, and there's really not much to do, you know, there's then just wait and hope that people will take the vaccine or whatever.
Right. Well, if people can find out more at bjjglobetrotters.com, right? Is there anywhere else you could point people to that they should check out?
Not really. I think bjjglobetrotters.com is probably the most interesting. Or, I mean, that's everything about that community. There's beltchecker.com, which is it's been running for... we launched it in January, and I think even in a pandemic times where nobody can train jiu-jitsu, it's done pretty well. We got more than 15,000 registered users this year. So that's a great project. Very democratic, very, very hippie, like community-based alternative to IBJJF. And that's it. Otherwise, I don't know. There's nothing else. If anyone wants to come to St. Bart for training, they can just show up any day. Message me on Instagram or something. I'm always happy to have visitors, and I just had this one guy here right now in America. I ran into the airport, and he had a jiu-jitsu t-shirt on. So we've been training a little bit, and I took him on guided tour of the island yesterday. So
cool. Yeah.
Always happy to have some visitors here.
I might take you up on that at some point whenever traveling's easier.
Anytime.
Cool, man. Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time. This has been great.
Oh, my pleasure.